Hey, Phil.
Hello, it's me.
What a horrible way to say hello. Welcome to Super Bailey Bros in Movie Land, episode number 12, and to Phil with a sadness.
Yes, I've got a bit of a poorly throat.
What I think is funny about this, because we've already, you know, listeners, we've already recorded all the stuff that's going to be in today's podcast. Phil sounds like he's close to tears a lot of the way through. So I think I maybe went a bit easier on you than I should have.
Oh, man. I don't know what's wrong with me. I just croaky. Phil. Well, what's funny is my voice sounds way worse than I actually feel. It doesn't hurt that much. I just just can't talk. I can't sing very well. I think I was driving home yesterday and I was trying to sing really loudly.
And you're belting out too hard.
Just to see if I could hit the high notes.
What were the songs?
Adele was on there.
Stay away from Adele if you don't want to ruin your throat. And you know, even my throat is still not fully recovered from my throaty problems from last week.
So we're the sick Bailey Bros this week.
But don't let that put you off.
Aren't you glad that that we can't transmit any diseases or anything through the headphones? Or
that's the single positive to take away from that. But hey, we've got a really cool show coming up for you. I'm sorry we're not going to be able to do any emails at the start because the show's packed full of stuff, and we'll save those for next week. But what else are we doing?
Well, we've just got an abundance of movies, really. Somehow we've ended up seeing loads of movies.
It's a total movie fest.
Yeah, so we've both seen Spotlight. We've got Deadpool. We've got Goosebumps. There's so many big movies that surely one of those will be interesting to you guys.
Yeah, yeah. We don't spend too long on any one of those movies and we don't do any spoiler stuff, but hopefully you'll be interested to hear what we thought of those.
Yeah, and just to say, if you really wanted to, we just didn't think we could fit in spoiler stuff, but if you did want to hear a spoiler thing on any of those movies, maybe email us in.
Yeah, yeah.
But we think there's loads of good stuff in there already.
Oh, so much. Yeah, and thank you, by the way, to everyone who's been in touch about Yes We Can.
Yes, Can.
You're quite right. Please do keep getting in touch because I've had a fairly warm response to it, but not had the kind of response I need to have the confidence
to launch it. You want emails saying, yes, I'm on board.
Yes,
you?
I can.
Yes, I can. Yeah.
Yeah. Do please email me or just email superbailyrose@gmail.com saying, yeah, we want you to try and figure out some way to get to the Cannes Film Festival so we can hear your interviews with people, your movie reviews, whatever. So yeah, let me know if you think it's worthwhile and we'll get that launched.
And also we've got to mention this, we're going to be doing trailers finally.
That's right. Well, let's say what we're doing. So we've got those movie reviews interspersed and we've got our cool super awesome trailer segment coming on,
we hope.
Yeah, it's gonna be so awesome. We think trailers are interesting, aren't they? They're strange. Maybe they've gone wrong, maybe they're getting better, getting worse, whatever. Yeah, listen to our thoughts on it
and find out exactly which one of those is true.
That's right. Okay, nothing else to say at this point then, I guess.
No, let's crack on.
Let's get going.
To infinity and beyond.
We need to get better at this.
I never know how to do that bit.
Well, Phil, it's time to shine a spotlight on a new / recent release.
Yay, Spotlight.
Shine a spotlight on Spotlight. That's one of those things, you know, a mirror of a mirror leading to reflections of reflections.
Yeah, I was just going for happy, just because I think we need to get as much happiness in as possible.
Well, before we go into
the actual movie.
No, that's good thinking. And here's a quick clip.
I'd like to challenge the protective order in the Kagan case.
You want to sue the Catholic Church?
We're just filing a motion, but yes.
You think it's that important?
Yes, I do.
Because obviously the church will fight us very hard on this, which won't go unnoticed by our subscriber base. 53% of them are Catholic. Mm-hmm.
I think they'll be interested.
Very well publicized film that everyone knows something about because it deals with one of the biggest scandals and one of the saddest and most depressing scandals in recent memory, I think.
Yeah, definitely one which it's hard not to feel something about. But the main focus, I'd say, is about the journalists who are investigating the story, isn't it?
Yeah, it's more of a journalistic movie than a crime movie. That's certainly true. And people have drawn parallels between it and All the President's Men, Robert Redford. And who's the other guy? Dustin Hoffman. Dustin for Prince. It's rubbish. Which, I would say it's not quite the same. I wouldn't be misled by that comparison if you've also heard that, because All the President's Men is much more high octane. It almost feels like a spy movie in some ways with deep throats, you know, the mysterious source. Spotlight is more perhaps a realistic impression of how a newspaper, an investigative team, builds a case very slowly.
Yeah, so it's about the Boston Globe team who are known as Spotlight. It's a team of journalists who are given free rein, really, to spend a lot of time and energy and resources on one story. Eventually, I think through the hiring of a new editor, played by Liev Schreiber, the team is put onto the case of... It deals with one priest and the accusations that are made against him for abuse with some children. And then from that, it kind of grows, isn't it?
That's right. And you come to recognise this is a problem at the same time as the team does. Part of the narrative of the movie is that these guys sort of should have been aware of this already, because people had come to them with this story of this priest, but there had been others as well in the past. And it would appear that no one had really joined the dots and no one had really considered there might be more to this story than what was right on the surface. And that's what you point out. That's Liev Schreiber. He comes in, he's a brand new editor, and he says, guys, you're not doing your job right if you're not looking into this.
And he was actually, I would say he was probably my favourite actor in the role.
Yeah, it's funny because the last time I saw him, and it's because I watched it recently on TV, was as Wolverine's other mutant brother who's got really long bone fingernails.
Sabretooth.
Yeah, it was that who it was? He's Sabretooth.
He's Sabretooth.
In The Wolverine or whatever it was. What was that film
X-Men
called?
X-Men Origins Wolverine.
X-Men Origins Wolverine, a truly terrible film. And he plays a really thuggish sort of brute in that. And it was so weird seeing him play this reserved, sort of still one waters run deep editor. He was really good though. Maybe our favourite role of the film, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I think he was so restrained and careful with how he approached it. It wasn't flashy performance. It wasn't sort of having a big dramatic yell about why aren't we investigating. It was just sort of, oh, I think we should look into this. And
it set the tone of the movie, considering that comes right at the beginning. It was a good tone setter. And you know, Liev Schreiber, joined by one of the most ensemble casts I think I've ever seen. Mark Ruffalo, Michael Keaton, they got Batman, Rachel McAdams, is Stanley Tucci is in it. He's actually, you blink and you might sort of miss him. He was also playing a quite under the radar sort of role, but he was brilliant in it again.
And I think the strength of the film is in the ensemble. I think it's in the fact that nobody's trying to outshine anyone else. They're letting the story sort of, it's quite a sensationalist story sort of outside of the film, but in the film, it sort of just emerges over time. And I think the director, Tom McCarthy, he's known for his sort of indie films and quieter films. And I think you can really see that he's got some strengths there in not letting the headlines of the story smother the actual tale that he wants to tell.
This is one of the trickiest things for a movie like this, because the subject matter is so emotional and extraordinarily awful to think about. And it rocked the world when these stories were released, finally. And you wonder, how does a person approach this kind of story? Because one thing, it's still in living memory, very much within living memory. So a lot of people portrayed in this movie are still alive, and almost certainly will hear about the movie and see it. And you can't avoid, you have to deal with that, right? You know, this is real life and these are real people. And in fact, there are people who maybe have not come forward yet for whom this story is very personally relevant as well. So it's a bold thing to take it on. Do you think they went the right way about it, given all of that background?
I think so. I think they'd sidestepped the scandal of it, the immediate scandal, and it gave room for each of the characters that they did show to sort of react to it in their own way. And I think that enables the audience to have sort of, for the most part, their own reactions to the story as well. I think each of the reporters has sort of a different moment where they realise the effect of these actions, what that has to the community.
It was very clever the way that it was done. I noticed this on a couple of occasions. They specifically flag up different scenarios and different people who respond to this. So as you say, one of the team just gets angry about it because things aren't moving the way they want them to move, or as quickly as they want them to move. They're frustrated because they thought, how can this have been hidden so long? Another person meets one of the abusers, actually, and she's just shocked. She can't believe that this real person seems to have been warped so much and so awfully. And another guy comes to realise that there's something close by his house. And that's three different reactions. Do you see what I mean? And yeah, they managed to paint that into very naturally into the cast that they have to show the full scope of sort of consequences to all of this unraveling. It's a really nice way of weaving journalistic intent with real life reaction. It was very clever.
I think the film, the director must be wanting you to think very carefully about this, and certainly the way the film leaves you, it leaves it in your mind so that it's turning over and again and again and again. I wonder if people, depending on how they feel about this issue before seeing the film, how that will affect how they engage with the film itself. Because for me, I'm a bit younger than Laurie. I don't know if you could tell.
Not much younger. Come on.
A little bit. But anyway, for me, growing up, I was it was around about the time where this scandal was breaking, and so I was kind of growing up with Mock the Week, Frankie Boyle making jokes about priests, and so the whole idea of priests and the scandal around them, it was already quite established in my mind going into it. Whereas I think for you, Laurie, it was slightly different. Is that fair to say?
Well, I know you said this to me before, and I think I remember saying to you at the time, not really, no. Okay. I think we were both young when this sort of thing happened. I don't recall suddenly becoming aware of it. And it's very hard then to picture what it would have been like but to have it revealed right on, yeah, like this.
I mean, the reason why I mention it is because in the film, the community aspect of the Catholic Church within Boston is really highlighted. I think perhaps if you're not aware of Boston's sort of culture and the Catholic sort of upbringing that lots of Bostonians have, it's harder to appreciate some of the subtleties.
That's
in the
true,
film.
And I didn't know anything about that. I've never been there. I don't know anything about Boston, really.
Yeah, so there's that. But also, I think what's harder to sort of imagine, for me anyway, watching the film, is the fact that there probably was a time where priests weren't under this sort of scrutiny or this sort of slight suspicion. In fact, the whole reason that the scandal kind of happens is because they're respected and trusted members of society. And so I wonder if maybe perhaps some people, maybe perhaps some older viewers of the film might have a different response to the film again.
Yeah, well, I mean, we sat in a cinema, Phil, that was filled with older couples because of the time that we saw it in the day, who every now and again would say, disgusting.
Yeah, again and again, like, and
genuinely,
again,
genuinely. And yeah, frequently that was the comment. And you just think, yeah, these possibly were people who recall it coming out in the headlines and being shocked to their very core. One of the things, amazing things about this movie, and one of the things it does is it's very careful about where it lays blame. And what I mean by that is there are very few characters within the movie who you can definitely say they're a villain. So it's a tricky thing to talk about. I mean, the whole film is a tricky thing to talk about. But you have a sense that the journalists at this paper and the staff at the paper, there are some people you start to think are kind of heroic in the way they go about their business. But actually, it's often revealed that they didn't necessarily do things at the right time or in the right way, and they could have caught this earlier. And then there's witnesses they talk to, and they're the same. They realize, oh, hold on, I could have done this sooner, I could have done it earlier. And even, I don't want to give any spoilers away, but there's a lawyer, and there's a couple of lawyers in the film, so I'm not going to, you have to guess which one it is. But there's a lawyer who you think of as a bad guy and a smooth character, and even he, at the end, says, look, we told you about this stuff. We told you about this stuff ages ago, and you did nothing. And it's really interesting. All the while, you think, oh, they're a hero, or they're the villain, or they're the reason this went wrong, or they're the reason this went wrong. The film went out of its way to show you that you can't lay the blame at the foot of any specific person, except, you know, the actual abusive priest, who it's very clear they are, you know, awful. And it just was clear the whole system and the whole town failed to point this out and to deal with it.
And I agree. And I think actually the director's using is almost playing with your ideas of movie tropes in order to make that effective. Because I constantly was sort of almost looking for a villain, looking for the plot twist almost of who's going to be the bad guy or something like that. Who's got sort of ties to the Catholic Church or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost, you almost start looking at it like it's a spy. Who's the mole in the team?
Yeah. And so it plays with your expectations in that way. And then you're right. I think it does really land that blow of sort of actually there's no one person sort of responsible. And actually it was more like people just didn't look.
Well, and this is the thing, and the film doesn't. And in doing that, I don't think the film is trying to say, therefore we shouldn't blame anybody. It's the opposite. The film is saying, we've all got to share the blame on this, and we've all got to learn, and you just can't stay silent for this kind of thing.
The only thing which I wasn't so keen on in the film is that part of the whole concept of this team that the film's about, the Spotlight team, is the idea that they'll fully investigate a story and I'll get to the bottom of it and tell the story right. That's kind of,
yeah, yeah.
They'll spend the time to do that. And one of the kind of points of the film is they start finding out this information about one priest and then a couple more priests. And the editor, Liev Schreiber's character, he insists that they carry on going. It's got to be a bigger story than that. They've got to make the most of this opportunity to tell this story. But they don't really ever answer the question of why the Catholic Church is so keen on protecting or hiding this issue, which is surely what the main question is, because that's where the journalist...
Yeah, maybe why are you doing this rather than just acknowledging, yes, they did that. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think it was this... It was the deepest question they didn't quite answer. That was the one thing which I thought thematically and sort of in terms of the story that they're telling, it was lacking. But was there anything in this film you didn't think worked?
You know, I mentioned it before. There is a scene, there's a few scenes where you see people's reaction to the things that they're discovering. And I don't think it was always that well done. The tone of the film is so pedestrian in a good way. It allows you to discover these things. People are just doing their job, you're following it, and you get to see the mystery unravel, basically. And it, and you also get a sense that, because how does it take so much effort? Why do we need to have so many people to corroborate all this? And it's because you want to build a rock solid case. And when you look at all that and it's done so well, then to have a few scenes where people express their emotions in quite a Hollywoody way felt a little bit out of place. And but at the same time, I'm conflicted about saying that, because I also think you cannot tell this story without allowing people to express their anger at some point in the movie. Otherwise, the anger just consumes you, I think, and you're not really able to appreciate it. So do you know what I mean? Like, they needed to have an outlet for it in the film so that that can be dealt with. But then it didn't kind of mesh with the tone of everything else.
So almost it was too deft in its portrayal of everything, but then it shot itself in the foot, because then there was no sort of visceral point of reaction.
It wasn't really allowed to be a drama. Do you know what I mean? It set itself up like that, but then it has to have dramatic elements in it because the subject matter is just so volatile, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting, because I watched the trailer for the film, and the trailer really sort of really wanted to emphasize the sort of drama of
Yeah,
it.
Right.
And
that's partly because that's what people want to see.
Yeah, and so I think if you're expecting sort of a high sort of taut emotional drama, I don't think this is that film. It's much more, as we've kind of already said, much more about the journalism, allowing the subtleties of that sort of process to emerge, which I found really interesting.
Yeah, I think they're brilliant performances throughout. Even Michael Keaton, you just think Michael Keaton and you think he's Batman, he's Birdman, but he isn't. Like, even he comes across as perfectly chosen for the role as a kind of suave man about town within Boston. Who's been nominated?
I think Mark Ruffalo has been. It's been nominated for Best Film.
Right.
That's definitely the case. Do you think it could win Best Film?
I don't think it will, and I'm not sure that it should either, because the film doesn't seem to want to do that. It's not a motion picture cinematic experience, I don't think. I think it's a really helpful and important film that shows how valuable investigative journalism is, and it's quite a tender portrait of it and everything, but it's not, you know, blockbuster.
Yeah, I think that's definitely. So you're saying maybe people don't need to worry about seeing it at the cinema, or?
Yeah, maybe not at the cinema. I know that's a risky thing to say. I'm sure it'll do plenty fine on the box office without people going to see it at the cinema. I think it should be watched. And in particular, I would like to say that if you're nervous about seeing it, and I know there will be, because people don't like to think about this stuff. You know, full disclosure, heads up, the film specifically talks about the things that it's about. So go in prepared for that. But at the same time, it doesn't dwell on it in a horrible way. It brings it up because it wants you to know how important it is that this has been discovered and realised, and to, you know, some extent dealt with.
Yeah, I mean, I was quite nervous about seeing it because I had so many expectations of what it would be about.
Yeah.
And it's a different film than I think you think it will be.
Yeah, I think it's easier to watch than you expect, and it's a kinder film than you would expect as well. Like, it does its very, very best to be sensitive, as far as I know anyway, to all the people involved and all the different responses and emotions that are involved. So definitely worth a watch.
What grade would you give this film?
I'd give it a B, I think, yeah.
A B. I don't really know what to make of the film.
I mean, it's not the kind of thing I fancy watching and rewatching, because once it hits you, it's hard to deal with, and you deal with it.
I think the things which I enjoyed about the film was the journalistic aspects. And so it's sort of a weird film to say you enjoyed, but I think it was, in terms of quality, I'd say, A-, I think. I've been giving out a lot of them, those recently.
Yeah, I know. This is the thing, right, and why I brought up All the President's Men right at the beginning of this, because that film, you would watch it again because it's fun to see them go to the next stage and discover the next level of corruption in the Nixon administration and everything, Watergate. And it's so mysterious, and it's like a political thriller, and it's fun when you see them making ground. The problem with this film, or not the problem, but the nature of this movie, is it isn't fun to see them gaining ground. It's heartbreaking to see them going ground.
You almost want them not to be able to find anything.
You almost wish they discover that this stuff just hadn't happened. But it's so important that they discover that it did happen. But it's not fun. It's not fun to relive that, no.
So there you go. There's Spotlight.
Yeah, I don't think you need to make that kind of noise about it, because I'm sure that everyone that can hear that we enjoyed watching it, and
yeah,
it was powerful. It was well directed. It was really well acted. I think watch out especially for Liv Schreiber and Michael Keaton. I think they were my standout performers. Oh, yeah. Stanley Tucci, actually. I think he was almost you miss him, but he was great too.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. Yeah, I just mean it's a difficult one to talk about. I'd be interested to know what other people's responses were to the film. Anything that they thought really deserves highlighting that we missed. It's much more about your personal experience with the film.
That's true, and it's set up that way. It wants you to take account of everything and realise, you know, what happened and, yeah, all that sort of stuff. Something, one thing I do want to add in, and we should do, we're a movie podcast after all, is talk about the BAFTAs.
Yeah.
The results are in, and The Revenant cleaned up.
Yeah, I'm as I expected, I think.
Yeah, we both did. That's the one that blew us away the most at the cinema. One of the things you can't miss is that Emmanuel Lubezki, who did the cinematography for The Revenant, he won again, and he's cleaned up so many times. He was Gravity as well as Birdman. That guy seems unstoppable.
Hot run.
Yeah, and well, from my point of view, totally deserved.
To be fair, I don't know how they do those films, so
fair
enough. Yeah, maybe it's just gaining momentum. I think it's probably, if it's doing well at this one, and it's been doing well at previous ones, it's probably going to do well at the Oscars, I think. Are we going to do, by the way, are we going to do like an Oscar prediction?
Would you like to?
I think maybe we should open it up to the listeners, and if you've got an inkling about which one's going to win which category, and email us in, and if you get it right, we'll give you a little shout out.
For me, I think The Revenant will win Best Picture.
Yeah, I think the funny thing with the Oscars is, and with any award show, is often you have the ones which you think will win, and then you'll have the ones which you want to win. And sometimes they're not really the same thing.
No, I thought I was going to want The Big Short to win, but actually, not really.
There you go.
Something I want to add in about the BAFTAs is, you know, Kate Winslet has won an award for her work in Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
Where she plays not his wife, is it? It's his...
It's like assistant.
Yeah, but really close, like, relationship.
Yeah, but like a long-term assistant, basically.
Yeah, and obviously John Boyega has won Best Rising Star, and then Mark Rylance won the Best Supporting Actor for his BAFTA. So Kate Winslet and Mark Rylance, you know, I'm going to say it right now. Come on, Britain, we can do better than this. Why do we have to nominate and let so many British people win?
Well, that's kind of, is the British...
Yeah, but like, it's just the British Academy. It's the people in the British Academy saying who wins. It's not British people nominating and choosing best British performances. Like Mark Rylance, well, who am I to judge? But I thought he was really, really good. But that's not the best supporting actor of all the films that have been released this year.
No, I hear what you're saying. I think maybe there was a bit of sort of patting ourselves on the back.
I guarantee if Ben Whishaw had been nominated for anything, he would have won it.
Best British face.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what? I saw The Lobster recently. We won't talk about that now. That's what we've been watching. He was in that. What a strange film that was.
The Lobster?
Well, we'll talk about it some other time.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Any other thoughts on the BAFTAs before we move on?
I'm a big fan of the Rising Star Award. I think that's probably the one which I'm most interested in.
Yeah,
I think
John Boyega deservedly won that. That's fair enough. I thought he was awesome in The Force Awakens.
And I think that's the thing which I think is award show should be doing, is highlighting people and giving them a boost, I think. Sometimes it feels like it's patting establishment on the back, but I think it has a purpose.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Good. Well, any thoughts on the BAFTAs, send them our way. We've not really done it justice, but there you go.
No, we haven't, but
not enough time. We'll move on. Okay.
Okay, listeners, are we ready to hear Laurie get angry?
Well, don't say that. You'll give it away.
You already sort of pretty much gave it away before you'd even see the movie. It's Deadpool time.
Deadpool.
Ryan Reynolds' new film, superhero film. It's from Fox. It came out around Valentine's Day. It's definitely not a Valentine's Day movie. Dirty jokes and silly quips with a bit of a superhero action-y theme.
Yeah, if that doesn't make you want to rush out and see it, then don't go and see it.
Well, apparently it's doing very well. It's got like the best opening ever for an R-rated film in America.
Do you know what happened when I started watching this film, listeners and Phil?
I know what happened.
I started making notes on my little notepad app on my phone. Oh, you shouldn't really have your phone on in the cinema. But I did because I was really not enjoying it. And as I tried to make notes, they gradually just became a series of really angry one-liners. And so at this point, I'd like to say that the one at the top of my list was, if there are films that make you restore your faith in humanity, this is one that removes it, makes you lose it.
So funny and witty.
Do I sound like I'm laughing to you, Phil?
No, he wasn't laughing. I was actually late to this movie. I didn't see the first 2 minutes or something like that.
You didn't miss anything.
Well, so I was actually going to read the text that I received while I was going as I was rushing to the cinema to make the showing of the movie. I got this text from Roy. Let me just find it. Hold on a second. So he texted me, movie started, I texted back, okay. And then within a couple of minutes, he said, I already hate it. You haven't missed anything yet. That was the entire message.
It's true. I did say that. I'm not going to deny it. Well, you better talk about this, Phil, because we know how I feel.
Well, I think we should make a key point here, Laurie, actually, because what happened was I eventually arrived in the cinema and I sat down. Laurie was there and he looked miffed, to say the least. And he was sort of brightly shining his phone in my face as he tapped away his little witty comment.
I didn't shine my phone.
And then suddenly Laurie's like, I'm just going to go to the loo. And he already looked a bit miserable. Despite the cinema laughing at various points, Laurie was not laughing. And then Laurie went out and then suddenly came back and he said, oh, I've just had a word with the cinema guys. They say I could go see Goosebumps instead. And so Laurie left me in the cinema to go watch Goosebumps. So Laurie, see Goosebumps.
Well, you know what? I think this is a great opportunity to throw up that item for discussion, although we won't discuss it just now. Is it ever okay to leave a film, to walk out of a film? Obviously, I think the answer to that is yes. I was not in the slightest bit interested in wasting an hour and 10 minutes or so of my life. I think I left 20 minutes in to watch the rest of that steaming pile of rubbish. I was much happier watching Goosebumps. And I got a flag up, the Odeon, George Street Odeon in Oxford. Not only did they immediately say, I came out and I said, you know, I just hate it. And they were like, well, do you want a full refund? It's like, no, can I go see Goosebumps? And they're like, yeah, sure. Do you want a free cup of tea? So either they hate Deadpool as well and they completely sympathize, or they're just the best cinema ever.
Well, there you go. But anyway, it left me in the dark, surrounded by no one, to have a good laugh by myself.
We were surrounded by a cinema full of laughing people.
But I was all alone, Laurie. And it's
laughing
always,
exchange tunes.
It's always great to laugh when you're alone, isn't it? Ha 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 ha. I think it's fair to say the movie is exactly what you'd expect it to be. If you combine...
What, based on what? Like its marketing materials?
Yeah, basically, if you combine the trailers, I really recommend seeing the trailers and just getting a sense if you like that sense of humour, because that is what you're getting. Combine that with Laurie's hatred, and then I think you'll get a good gauge of whereabouts you stand with this movie. I think...
What's good about it? Tell me what's good. Could I not see?
I think there's some good action in it. I think Ryan Reynolds does do well in the role. I almost feel like lots of people have said this, he's born to play that role, and he's really good in what the role requires. I think the key thing is this isn't a movie for Laurie or anyone like Laurie.
You can't just say that. What am I like?
Well, I just don't think it's your cup of tea.
But you need to explain to the listeners for that to mean anything to them.
I think the whole point of the movie is that it's trying to be irreverent. It's trying to shock. It's trying to cause controversy. It's trying to... Well, the whole kind of concept of the movie is this Deadpool character is unlike other superheroes. He's ugly looking. He gets... During the course of the film, he has this sort of thing which gives him superpowers, but also makes him hideously unattractive, and that's kind of the main motivator of the film. I think the movie is basically doing exactly what it should have done if you wanted to see that character. Deadpool
is this what he's like in the comics?
The whole point about Deadpool is he talks to the reader of the comic. He's always breaking the fourth wall. He's always making these sort of slightly knowing jokes, winks to the audience. And so in terms of what the character is, this film delivers almost perfectly on what it should be. Except for the fact, I didn't really like the film. I don't think it's funny enough, unfortunately. It doesn't really have enough wit or humour in it. It's constantly making jokes all the time. That's part of the character, is he's always making these wisecracks.
Yeah, you wish he'd shut up.
His
right.
Nickname in the character is the Merc with the Mouth, the Mercenary with the Mouth. Mm. He's always, always, always talking in the movie, always doing these very quick, fast-paced little... If this is your sense of humour, and if you've seen the trailers and... all that sort of stuff, I think you'll probably have a really good time in the movie. It doesn't really float my boat. I didn't really enjoy it. I found it a bit exhausting. It's constant, that sort of stuff. There's a real potential here. I was quite excited to see this movie based on the ideas of it, because the idea of somebody who could make fun of superhero movies is a really good one.
Yeah, if only they'd done that. Yes, that is a good idea.
And there's one brief clip. Maybe we could get a clip of it. I think you've...
Oh yeah, no, I will have played a clip already by this point.
Right, okay, good to know. X gon' give it to you. On your
own, X go deliver to you. Go get some.
She gonna do a superhero landing. Wait for it. Woo! Superhero landing. Yeah, that's really hard on your knees.
Totally impractical. They all do it.
You're a lovely lady, but I'm saving myself for Francis. That's why I brought him.
I prefer not to hit a woman, so please play.
I mean, that's why I brought her? Oh, no, finish your tweet. It's not, that's fine. Just give us a second. There you go, hashtag it. Go get her, Tiger.
Yeah.
It's so good being a producer on this show. Yeah. When he's doing those sort of self-referential, making fun of superhero movies in general, and it's not about being gross or when he's being crass. It's just exhausting because you know that the film writers and the filmmakers are really trying to push this envelope with their supposed shock humor, and it just becomes a bit childish and immature.
I agree. I mean, it's not a surprise.
Yeah. I think the thing is I don't want to judge people for enjoying the film.
Now, this is a very important point, and I'm going to jump in here, man, because what it's important for me to say is that my opinion of this film is not my opinion of the people who enjoy this film.
Okay.
Like, Pete, I know already, we all know already, we did our own movie litmus test a few episodes back. Like, people are capable of enjoying all sorts of different films. It's no reflection on who they are or what they like or whatever, or, you know, anything like that.
Uh-huh.
But I hated this film. I thought it was ugly. I thought it completely lacked any imagination or quality of any discernible kind. It was like Grand Theft Auto, that kind of video game, but realized on screen. Worse, it was like, do you remember the game Conker's Bad Fur Day?
Yeah, I do.
This might be a bit out there for some of our listeners, Phil, but it was Nintendo 64, when it was the king of consoles, released a game called Conker's Bad Fur Day that was, shock horror, an 18. And, you know, it was an 18 because there was swearing in it, and he used to smoke, and he used to drink, like, alcohol and stuff like that, and it was like, oh, this is so naughty. The thing is, he was a cuddly squirrel as well, and I think Deadpool is just like that. Deadpool is like when your teacher comes up on stage at the end of school and is in a play, and the role that they have makes loads of really rude jokes, but it's a teacher on stage. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, there's Mr. Samuels. What's he doing on stage talking, you know, talking rude and making jokes about? It's like, oh, I'm going to flick my chewing gum in the bin, kids. This studio just want to make money out of you. I'm going to have to slow down because I'm going to get angry here. I hated all the marketing for it because it was telling you how you should react to this film. It's saying to you, look how edgy we are. Here's a photo of him with his bum. Oh, he's got a great bum. Look, we've used emojis to make our billboard here. There's a skull and there's a little poo thing and there's an L. Oh, Deadpool. The point is, the kind of humour that it's using to do that, it wants you to believe that this is irreverent. Nothing could be further from the truth. Every joke and every billboard and every costume and everything in that movie was signed off by an executive sat in a board meeting. Like, they sat there and said, yes, I think this is the kind of irreverence that we can get away with. That's right. I love that joke. I love what you did there when he may have said that rude word and then slapped that person in the face, because I think that will really attract this demographic that we're going after. Oh, yeah. Blah, 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 blah. Those are the people who wrote this film. If you want to actually be irreverent with a film like Deadpool, the point is you don't do what the suits and the business people tell you to do. So what you should want to see instead is a Deadpool who wears a nice shirt and gets his tax returns in at the same time, or a Deadpool who's really polite and forgives all the bad guys, and he shames them into prison instead of shooting them in the face with big blood splatters. Do you know what I'm saying to you, Phil? Does that any of that make sense, what I just said?
And there we are. There's our movie hate for this episode. That was great. Thanks for doing that.
I feel like that wasn't... I didn't do a very good job there.
I thought we were going to save that movie hate for another time, but there you go, listeners. It's been packaged inside the review.
Yeah, I was happy to leave within 20 minutes because I refuse to let a studio tell me what passes for irreverence.
I think you've, in a very long-winded and hate-fueled way, you've managed to hit the main point. I think the problem is, actually, it doesn't really deliver on what it could have delivered on. And instead, it delivers on, actually, a very generic superhero version of this character. I feel like it's just a wasted opportunity where they could have been really creative and interesting in how they broke the fourth wall and how they made jokes about the film, the franchise, superheroes. Even the jokes he made were a little bit old.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's your teacher turning up and telling those jokes.
Like, it did make me chuckle. One of the few jokes that did make me chuckle was when he called one of the girls with a shaved head, another character in it, called her Sinead O'Connor. And I thought, oh, that's quite funny.
Yeah, but that's not actually funny.
It's slightly amusing.
Yeah, but because Sinead O'Connor had a shaved head.
Yeah, exactly. And I know that, so I feel good about
it. Well done, Phil.
But the thing is, Sinead O'Connor, I don't think 15-year-olds in the cinema are going to be, even know who Sinead O'Connor
is. Isn't that even worse, that a film with such an immature and crass sense of humour is not marketed a teenager's film?
But it kind of is. I think the thing is ultimately, we're kind of getting to this sort of weird halfway house between movie hate and marketing and reviews and everything. But it's part of the film, I think. The marketing is part of the film as well. I think actually they've done a really good job of marketing the film for the audience.
Yeah, it's because they're cynical people after your wallet.
Yeah, and so you've got a problem both with the corporate side and also the product that they produce. And that, I think that's fair. That's a fair response. I think if you've watched the marketing, if you've enjoyed the marketing, you probably will enjoy the film. I actually think there's other films that have done a better job with the same techniques and the same sort of, without even the same remit of the character. I thought, having seen Wolf of Wall Street recently, that had loads of sort of fourth wall breaks and lots of voiceover. And that was much better told and much more funny with that and clever with that and used that so much better than Deadpool did. And actually, the fatal flaw of the film is the fact that it becomes quite generic in the final act. It becomes really generic.
Oh, really?
And really superhero movie-ish. And you know how everyone knows what a superhero movie is? They're the bread and butter of blockbusters these days.
Well, yeah.
And Deadpool, even Deadpool, the thing which is designed to sort of mock and poke holes in that sort of thing and make fun of genre conventions and all that sort of stuff, it fails to do that and in fact becomes its own victim.
I believe just revealing its true colours film.
Perhaps it's finally emerging that it is actually just a corporate film trying to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore it sells out on its premise at the last half of the movie, and then you wonder if it actually had any sort of a real guts, so to begin with.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think don't make it easy for these guys. I say. Don't make it easy for them. You don't have to laugh at these jokes because they have calculated on their spreadsheets that these are the kind of jokes that people in your age range will laugh at. You don't have to do that. You don't have to buy the inevitable adult merchandise that will come from this film. I guarantee it. There'll be like celebration cards. There'll be Valentine's gifts. There'll be like calendars. There'll be t-shirts. Deadpool looks to me the most marketable asset because it can put rude slogans on cards and things. And they just want your dollar. So don't make it easy for these studios to do this to you. Don't allow them to get away with putting pure cynicism on the screen.
You've already lost. I was in the movie with, I think it was an international school. There's a whole load of them in that sort of 18 to 21 bracket, and they were howling with laughter, and that wasn't even their language. So I think they've already won, Laurie.
Well, the marketing, I know they have. Don't make it easy for them. Don't let them
fight the good fight. We'll anyway. Fight them on the butchers or fight them.
Yeah, exactly. That's the right attitude. Yeah, look, I know loads and loads of people have enjoyed it, and do hear me when I say this isn't a criticism of you at all.
Sounds like it is there.
No, it isn't. I just hated the film.
Cynical marketer strikes again.
Yes.
So just to kind of round off this random review that doesn't really make sense.
Give us a grade.
And isn't really a proper review, but more of Laurie's ranting. But I would say ultimately the film for me is probably a C. I think if you're going to do Deadpool as a film, it kind of hits all the right markers and kind of delivers on what it promises. I didn't really enjoy it that much. I didn't think it was inventive or creative enough. It's a shame it didn't really deliver what I wanted it to. Or what I thought it could have done. But for some people, I think they'll love it.
Okay. You know, and for what it's worth, I admit that it may be, I have a slightly more positive view of it because I left Deadpool to watch it. But I really like Goosebumps. There's not really any story there to tell. You know, no surprise, all the monsters from the Goosebumps series of books turn up. Jack Black plays R.L. Stine, the author. Couple of generic American kids are there. But it's actually genuinely funny. I'm surprised to say I laughed a lot.
Well, I got the sense that it was kind of like a bit like Jumanji. Is that a fair comparison?
Yeah,
no?
Exactly. All these monsters turn up and cause havoc, and it's how can we save the town, this tiny town? But it really is funny. Jack Black does a good job. He's on good form. The kids, the young leads do a good job. They're actually quite charming. They had a laugh with the script. You can tell the people who made this film had a nice time. It'll be on TV, I'm sure, over Halloweens and Christmases to come.
With the Goosebumps series, it was designed to be scary, genuinely scary for kids. Is it a scary film, or is it completely avoiding that and it's more sort of Night at the Museum sort of fun?
Yeah, more Night at the Museum. I think it will scare some children, I would say. I mean, there's a puppet character. There's a ventriloquist dummy who's genuinely quite sinister. And they've done a good job of getting his eyes looking pretty evil. He's called Slappy.
Right.
yeah, I really liked it. I genuinely laughed out loud in a couple of scenes.
So what would you give the film?
Yeah, I mean, first off, if it's a choice between Deadpool and Goosebumps, definitely Goosebumps all the way.
I think we made your
feelings
clear.
I think I'd be very clear about that. I give it a B+ for what it was. Good, for what it was, it was good fun.
So there you go. That's two films for the price of one.
Two for the price of one.
Actually.
It genuinely was, in this case, plus a cup of tea. Can't say fairer than that.
If you've got any thoughts on those films, email us in at superbaileybros@gmail.com. Or tweet us at superbaileybros.
At superbaileybros, thanks very much. Sorry for going off on one.
It's okay.
Just when you thought the Bailey Bros podcast had nothing left to give this summer.
No, Phil.
episode, this episode, we finally do the trailer thing. Here it comes. Boom.
So we thought we would do a little moment here to talk or spend a little time talking about trailers, how they affect which movies we go and watch, how they sometimes spoil it, and how they all get put together.
Yeah, I was seeing, the thing which sparked all off for me was seeing somebody online had done like a remake of Harry Potter 6, and they just recut it and re-edit it to make it seem like it was like a rom-com.
No, it's like a teen romantic comedy.
Yeah, that's it, like a teen classic comedy.
Well, I've got that here. Should I play some audio from that?
Yeah, do.
All right, I'll play that here.
I've got a really good feeling about Hogwarts. I feel it's the place to be tonight. Do you know what I mean?
No.
Enjoying your classes, Harry? What about your activities outside the classroom? I can't help wondering if...
Oh, no. She's brilliant, and we're friends. But no.
What you see before you is a curious little potion.
Hello, darling.
The most powerful love potion in the world.
I'm in love with her! Oh, all right, fine, you're in love with her. Have you ever actually met her?
No. Can you introduce me?
Come on, Harry. We've got a game to win.
Excellent.
Excuse me, I have to go and vomit.
I happen to be his girlfriend.
I happen to be his friend.
These girls, they're gonna kill me, Harry.
See that girl over there? She's trying to smuggle you a love potion.
Really?
She's only interested in you because she thinks you're the chosen one.
But I am the chosen one. Okay, sorry, kidding.
Oh, to be young and to feel love's keen sting.
Pretty good.
It is good, isn't it? It's surprising how easy it is to twist and turn something into a completely different sort of movie.
And it's weird, the signals that it switches on in your head to make you think, oh, right, that's what kind of film this is. So what have they done there to fool us into thinking it's a teen romantic comedy? Which it kind of is.
Yeah, it has got a bit of that. I think it's mostly down to the music. It's amazing how much music just changes everything and completely changes the whole sort of vibe of something.
The used music that your brain probably recognises, but because it did such a good job of inspiring you at the time. There's a particular, like the Gladiator soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The one at the end. Woo, 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 woo. Is that good? Oh, that's too low. It's really bad to be doing this when we both got bad throats, Phil. Okay, stop it. Like, I'm sure I've seen that in loads.
No, stop it.
I'm sure I've heard that in loads of trailers because it switches on, it probably switches on a little bit of the Gladiator switch in your mind, as well as the inspiring, oh, this is going to be a great tale.
And all of the stuff attached to that movie, so like the epic sort of adventure hero's tale, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. But you know, even away from the kind of fun stuff they do with trailers, I think there's been a bit of a rethink recently because a lot of trailers seem to be giving too much away. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there's some trailers which definitely have done that. I think even the most recently, they've just done another trailer for the Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice, the worst titled movie ever.
Oh dear.
They've just done another trailer, the final trailer is what they've released it as. And that's given even more away of that film. I feel like I've seen the movie already.
Well, tell us, what's in it?
Well, so it's going to have Batman fight Superman. It's going to have... They revealed like quite... I almost don't want to say it on the podcast because I care more about protecting this movie than the Marchers.
Okay.
Because they revealed the main villain. They've revealed the big sort of surprise, the sort of character who's in disguise and you don't necessarily know what she's about. It's just, it's unbelievable that they don't want to protect their property.
Well, do you think... Is it partly what we talked about before, which is that people... The cinema... being the industry that it is and needing everyone to step through and prove the box office, you know, has done well. They want people to come in and maybe they're nervous that if people can't really imagine what the film is going to be like, they just won't turn up.
But what's really surprising is the fact that consistently, it seems, the people who are most likely to buy the ticket and go are the people who really don't want to see it spoiled. They're the
ones. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, like I think it's normally the big sort of superhero movies that are the ones which people don't want to be spoiled. Star Wars was another example of like a franchise that didn't want to be spoiled.
Well, that's got, I mean, as we'll talk about that in a minute, there's some strange things they did in that trailer.
Yeah, but they're the sort of people that really want to see some footage of the film, but they don't want to have like the main plot points ruined, surely. I think that's the key thing. It's not just that they're showing lots of the movie because they do three trailers, I think, now. something for a major like movie. There's about three 2 minute long trailers. It's not just the footage, it's also the content of it, that they're revealing plot points or major things that are you'd expect would be kept as some sort of surprise to the movie.
I think that's probably true. One of the key ones that I was aware of last year was Terminator Genesis. So one of the things that they did in that movie, and you know, I hope this isn't too bad a spoiler, I don't think many people will be watching this film, although I think you should. I enjoyed it personally.
It's fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it was quite good fun. And you know, it isn't a spoiler because it's in the trailer, but they very, very clearly reveal that John Connor has become a bad robot in the trailer. But in the film, as you watch it, that moment is clearly meant to be a surprise.
Yeah, like, there's been quite a few famous movies that have done this. One of the other ones was the Terminator Salvation. The
Terminator, what's going wrong?
Yeah, what is with that film marketing? But they revealed that the main guy, the guy played by the Avatar guy, I think in the trailer they revealed that he was a Terminator who just looked like a human.
Did they in the trailer there?
Yeah,
that?
And it's like a major part of the movie, isn't it? Does he know who he is?
You want it to be a shock and a reveal, don't you?
Yeah, but apparently you're just like, no, I just know that right from the beginning.
You wonder, I mean, this is where you start wondering how much say do the directors and the storytellers have over the trailer, or does it literally get farmed out to a marketing team and they just butcher it and do whatever they want to get the people in?
It must be that they lose control. Because there's been some instances where the whole kind of main kind of thrust of the movie is spoiled. I mean, with Castaway, their own trailer, it revealed that he got off the island. It had a scene in the trailer where he said, like, I'm going back and everyone's moved on. And like, and it's just
what a weird thing to do.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's just, why would they do that? That's why would strange. They ruin the movie in that way? I mean, thankfully, that movie ended up being a bit more about the experience than the actual end result.
Yeah, well, I wonder whether they literally get focus groups of people in who watch a trailer and then they say, will you go and see this film? And there's probably one or two people saying, oh, you know, I don't know, if he doesn't get off the island, that'd be a bit depressing, wouldn't it? And the executive's like, oh my goodness.
Put it in now.
We have dodged a bullet here. Get it in there and they'll be flooding through that gate.
And all it was is one lady who just didn't like the idea
of him being lost on an island. Okay, so that's problem number one. And I think people will have loads and loads of examples of that. Here's another problem that is very common today in the trailer world, is people dressing up terrible movies, in particular terrible movies, to look like different films. So trailer people who... You know, this is why that YouTube channel exists, that hilarious YouTube channel, Honest Trailers.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that's kind of the genesis of that idea, is what if we teased and trailered films like they actually are, rather than the marketing people want us to believe. You know, two on top of my list right now, Good Dinosaur, The Good Dinosaur.
Oh, yeah.
So the trailer for that, I won't play it here. We don't have time for that. It was rubbish anyway. But the trailer for that had a really emotional pop song behind it, and it was all kind of about this journey. There wasn't any dialogue in it at all, except for one word, hello, and it seemed like it was going to be a really dreamy, romantic, heartfelt tale.
Well, like
about
artistic.
Friendship. Yeah, exactly. And it looked like it was, I thought, to be honest, I didn't think it looked good, but I thought it looked better than what the film turned out to be, which was a deep south, yokely, ridiculous, terrible, thin story. We won't go into it.
I think we already have. I still can't believe they went deep south as the voices of dinosaurs.
Well, such a strange thing to do. But like
that wasn't in the trailer, was it? Not
one bit of that dialogue was in the trailer. They didn't show the rancher T-Rexes herding their cattle around. And you wonder whether it's because they realised no one's going to watch this film if we do that. You know, another one I have right here. I don't know. You know which one? Can you guess?
I can't actually.
It's Spy.
Oh, you hate that movie.
I did hate that movie. That's Melissa McCarthy as a kind of, well, as originally as a spy's admin assistant turned into a spy who completes a mission. But what was really interesting was that the trailers don't portray the film, or at least most of the trailers, the ones that I saw before going to see it, didn't portray it as that film at all. Actually, the main setting of those trailers is that the funny dynamic, what if those spies in the field like James Bond, rather than us focusing on them, what if we focused on the back office staff who make it possible for them to do what they do?
Uh-huh.
You know, and they're making cups of tea and biting ginger nuts while
sort of guiding them through that.
Yeah, while helping them carry out an assassination or something. Like, that is a funny idea. Like, hey, you're laughing right now.
Yeah, I am.
That is what I thought the film was going to be, but it wasn't. It ended up being a really terrible film filled with awful jokes and unnecessary violence, loads of swearing, all about this, you know, overweight woman. And I don't feel shame about saying that, because that's what she wants to tell us. The entire film talks about how overweight she is. Boring and offensive. Anyone? Yeah, it's about her being a spy and somehow being really good at kung fu.
So you felt misled on that
driver
movie.
Sorry, yeah, I'm getting off on a rant again. Yes, I felt misled.
It's funny though, because sometimes I've enjoyed the trailer more than I've enjoyed the film. In this case, I was really excited about this movie. And I've watched this trailer more than I've watched this film. I've watched it multiple times.
Which one?
So it's the trailer for Super 8. And I think I'll have to tweet out which trailer it is. We'll tweet these trailers.
But in case people haven't heard of this is the J.J. Abrams. He kind of broke onto the scene with this, didn't he?
Yeah, so it's J.J. Abrams' film, which kind of draws on 70s sort of Spielbergian E.T. kind of vibes. And it's about some kids filming a monster movie with their Super 8 camera. Mm. And then something happens in the town and there's some sort of thing going on and they think it might be an alien and that sort of stuff like that. It ends up being quite nasty and a bit dark, actually. But the trailer has an unbelievable sort of aura. I know it's such a pretentious,
mysterious
thing.
Yeah,
and it's sort of this, whoever made that trailer knew exactly what they wanted to do, because that trailer makes it seem like it's a Steven Spielberg film, as if it's going to be sort of enchanting and adventurous, but not dark at all.
Yeah, interesting.
And the music and everything like that, the shots that they show, it's a really good trailer.
So is this a good thing or a bad thing? Because you're saying the trailer was better than the film.
I think what I'm trying to say is it ties in with what you were saying about how trailers misrepresent sometimes. But sometimes I just think trailers are really good. I think there's something about trailers.
The excitement.
Trailers are really cool. I really love seeing the trailers at the beginning of movies. I always like to see them if I can. I know some people like to skip them entirely.
I'll tell you, well, I don't like it when you put in a Disney DVD and you have to watch 8 different versions of The Jungle Book being sold to you. But in films, yeah.
But I always like those. Even on DVDs, I like watching the trailers and things like that. There's some movies which I've seen the trailers of that I've never seen the movie of. But I've seen the trailers a lot of times that I remember the movie.
It taps into that slightly childish, in a good way, childish sense of, oh, I can't wait for that to come out. I'm so excited about the idea of going to see this movie. But, you know, it's no good. I don't think it's any good if they're lying to you about what it's going to be like. To me, that suggests that even the production team know the film that they've made is not any good.
I wonder if they have to start making the trailer way before they've even kind of got a final edit.
That's possibly fair. Well, I've got my third problem with trailers, and then we can be more positive about it. So the third problem I have is trailers that use things that are not in the film.
Oh, yeah.
And this is an interesting trend that started happening, not just misrepresenting what's in there, but specifically using clips or moments or dialogue that ends up not being in the movie at all. And, you know, on the most positive side of things, that could just be, as you say, they haven't finished making a movie yet. So some stuff's there that isn't in the final cut. The more cynical side of me says they're trying to entice you with things that aren't going to be there to avoid spoilers. But there's something weird about that. You know, most obviously done with Star Wars, right?
Yeah, Star Wars had a couple of shots. I mean, one of the most obvious ones was when Kylo Ren first ignites his lightsaber. That it was used in the trailer, and that's what everyone was talking about.
Yeah, it was such a big deal on the internet, wasn't it?
Because he had those two little sidebars on his lightsaber. But that never made it. They never made it in the final film.
That shot wasn't there.
It's never there. And you wonder, you reckon that might have just been filmed for the sake of kind of keeping a bit of mystery and...
Well, I wonder whether they made it out of the offcuts of that scene deliberately, so that, because they, you know, it's in a scene that happens, but I wonder whether they just decided to cut it, and then now that they've cut it, because Star Wars is Star Wars, they don't want to give too much away in those trailers, so instead they figure we'll shove it in the trailer
and mislead people, because then
haven't spoiled anything.
They're being trailed by something which isn't going to happen in the movie.
And then I even thought in The Big Short, do you remember we played the clip from the trailer a couple of weeks ago? One of the things they do there's a particular scene where Steve Carell is in the ratings agency and the lady there is saying, oh, I'm sure the world's banks have more incentives than greed. And then the music kind of stops and he goes, you're wrong. The thing is, that isn't in the film like that.
No, it's a good little trailer moment.
Sorry to disappoint you, but that conversation doesn't happen like that. It's been chopped up to represent a moment that suits the purposes of the trailer, but not honest to the movie itself.
And you're saying that's a problem. You don't like that.
I think it's interesting that they do it. It isn't what is in the film, is it? Is that within the remit of a trailer? I'm curious to know what the listeners think. Like, have they seen this happen? Those three things. Number one what was number one?
you always listen to number ones, number
twos.
Well,
it's nice. People like a bit of structure, man. That's the way the world
works.
First
the A and then number two.
Oh, dear. So I think number one was trailers that give too much away. So they give away spoilers. Number two was trailers that mislead people. And number three are trailers that have stuff in it that isn't even in the movie. So I want to know, listeners, have you come across these things?
Yeah, let us know. That'd be interesting.
And does it bother you or not? Sorry, I'm being too enthusiastic.
It clearly bothers Laurie.
I just find it interesting. Yeah, okay, yeah. But well, why don't you hit us with the more positive side of trailers? Because the other thing I think we should do is we should do our own little trailer.
There's actually quite a lot of artistry and creativity within trailers. They're kind of like mini movies, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're telling a story, but they're just lacking that major sort of resolution, but they're promising it. And I think there is a lot of there's a lot of artistry to it. There are some really, really good trailers, aren't there?
Yeah, it's true. I think so. And the one we talked about already before, it'll always remember it, Star Wars The Phantom Menace.
Yeah, like watching that, that was so exciting. I think, in fact, I remember people reading online about people paying for another movie just to see
the trailer again.
And then when the trailer was done, they left the cinema. That was how good that trailer was.
I mean, there's obviously Star Wars hype in there, but it was an amazing trailer as well.
It was just looked so creative and exciting and so visual. And
they used the visuals in the best way possible, didn't they?
And that's what I think a trailer should be about. And there's lots of techniques that are starting to emerge. I think it's almost like trailers go through cycles, and then I think we're coming to the end of a cycle, because those little tropes and little genres,
they're becoming too known, too recognised.
Yeah, I think everyone, I mean, one of the biggest known ones that has made it across the board is the Inception noise. Having said that, the Inception trailer is awesome. I remember being so excited for that movie based on those trailers, because they were really exciting. And that, whatever you think about that Inception noise, that really works as
well, making, especially in cinemas where they've got hefty subwoofers, right, that can, you can really feel the bass and it as it ripples through you. That's what it's made for. You know what makes me laugh is that some of the Harry Potter trailers did the same thing, but instead of using a horn, they use Voldemort's scream.
Oh yeah, they use it like 7 times.
You've got to watch that trailer. That's amazing.
What we'll do is we'll put all of these on the website. We're going to put
Or maybe Twitter or something.
We'll find a way so you can what we're talking about. That's with so these funny things. But there's some really funny little.
I think what we should do is we should do a trailer now, a live trailer right now.
Oh yeah,
that encapsulates all the different things that people are using right now. What you would do first of all is you have kind of a quirky scene on its own with someone saying something a little bit mysterious, whatever it was, and then finishing with a punchline. And then you'd have kind of a voiceover explaining how what just happened there, what that guy just said, is actually a symptom of an ever-increasing and mysterious problem.
Then you probably have somebody falling through the ground for unknown reasons.
In silence, so there wouldn't be any soundtrack for that. The soundtrack
but then
would stop
you just have a little cut-it-off scream like...
Yeah, yeah, and or you'd see something just for a split second, and all of a sudden,
yeah, I love the little weird. What do you call that sound?
The that's sub bass, man. Yeah, that's taking a dive down the bass channels.
Can we play a few of those?
Yeah, yeah.
Then what you need to do is start getting a load and load of little clips that cut to black, cut to black, cut to black. It's always the black, always the black.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And at this point, you're seeing like montages of different clips. Maybe you're having one person who carries on talking and finishes off that voiceover thing, but interspersed with like running away. Like,
or looking, a worried looking face.
Or worried looking faces, or jumping, or like someone, a fist, like a punch happening, but it cuts away before the fist connects with
that
the face.
That sort of Brad Pitt in Troy leap thing.
Yeah,
not
yeah, yeah.
Showing the sword going in.
Not
no,
showing
no,
the
no.
Sword. No, you don't want to give away the money shot, man. No. And there's got to be like a little really cool thing that goes so fast. You can't really see what it is. But your brain recognizes, whoa, that was cool. What
and then
was
they
that?
It cuts away before you get to it, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, exactly that, exactly that. And then, well, how's it end these days?
Now they do the big, big noise. And then they suddenly, out of nowhere, out in the darkness of night, emerges the big money shot, the really, really big one. Like the big fish thing jumping out of the water in Jurassic Park.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And it just leaps up, and then it cuts to black again. Then it shows the nice little titles, Jurassic Park,
and maybe
Jurassic
you have
World.
Like an ironic melody at that point, which is like a happy melody, but there's like a nasty bass, like cellos going.
Like a remake of like a kid's song.
Yeah, exactly that kind of thing.
Like Post and Pat, but with like a dirty remix garage.
Exactly. That sounds awful. Poor Post and Pat.
And then you've got to have the little post-title sting thing, which is normally a little joke, and it's normally just a little self-contained joke. It's in all the trailers.
Depending on whether it's a funny film or not.
No, even in like Batman movies and
no,
stuff.
Oh, really? Wow, those are a joke.
You know, the one where in The Dark Knight Rises, I quite like those trailers, but in The Dark Knight Rises, they had the one where he keeps on mentioning about his car. And it's like, I think your wife's taken the keys. And he's like, my wife? And then it shows her driving away. And that's the last bit of the movie.
Well, there you go. There's the modern trailer as done by the Bailey Bros. I don't think that went as well as I maybe imagined. but yeah, okay. Well, I wonder which way it'll turn now. When you look at old trailers, like we played a clip from the a trailer of Chinatown. Do you remember
that? Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's really different. Like, it's aged. I find it really interesting to watch old trailers. Even watch the original trailer for Star Wars.
Yeah,
1977.
Yeah. Well, what's amazing is that they actually have, you know, the kind of stereotypical voiceover guy in a world where...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they literally say
they do
stuff.
They do have that sort of stuff. But now, this is what I mean, in cycles of movie trailers, they don't have that anymore. Now it's like they use dialogue...
A character monologue.
...in the movie and use it as sort of a summary... Or to indicate stuff about the movie.
Well, here's our own epilogue to this section here, Phil.
I think trailers as a whole need to reinvent themselves, basically, again. It seems like they don't really match the purpose. Because back in the day, trailers were the only way you'd find out about movies. If you were at the cinema, that was the only way you're going to find out about them.
That or amazing TV specials, like the Jurassic Park ones that I watched again and again and
again.
Yeah,
like on Channel 4 or something like that, or whatever.
Those.
That was like how you found out about movies, and that's how you kind of got hyped for them. But now... Trailers, you can access them anytime, anywhere, on YouTube, as I've done with lots of films. I've still watched the Man of Steel
trailer. And you build, and it's fan theories is the new thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and people break them down. And so these trailers, which were meant to be seen once, just to kind of build anticipation, now they're watched again and again and again, broken right down. And you have advertising and internet blogs talking about TV spots. The Super Bowl has just happened in America. Like, loads of money being spent on these 30-second adverts for movies, and they've been released for the new sort of big blockbusters.
Yeah.
It's almost like there's too much trailer going on. And I wonder if actually you're going to see a lot more of the sort of Star Wars style of approach to advertising movies going forward.
Less is more.
Yeah, they really hold back on what they're going to show you. But then maybe studios don't know what they're doing, and maybe they're just going to keep on churning out these.
Well, I'd like to finish this segment because, you know, we talked a lot about trailers, and I think we should really end it with someone who really knows how this industry works, Phil. Someone who's at the top of their game, and, you know, whatever they've got to say about it must be what the gold standard is. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Who?
I'm talking about Cameron Diaz's character in The Holiday.
Bram!
Where she plays a trailer executive. So let's hear what the maestro has to say.
Rebecca Green was just your average 20-year-old until the father she never knew left her something she never expected.
Don't scream.
Your father left you something in his will.
I never met my father.
Well, at least now you know he was interesting.
Lindsay Lohan. James Franco. Deception.
How do you happen to have two guns?
Didn't think one would be enough.
Christmas Day.
Amazing! It finally looks like a hit.
And that is why they pay you the big bucks.
I think we should just go back to the original cut on the end. It's so much stronger.
I agree.
And make Christmas Day twice as big. But try it in a red, like a happy red, not like a Scorsese red.
Happy red.
Okay, so we're done.
Okay, well, that's the end.
It's the end of the show.
The end of the show. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you're interested in all the things we said about the movies that we saw. I hope you didn't get too annoyed about my anger at Deadpool.
I did.
I know, Phil did.
No, I'm just joking. It's fine, though.
You were nervous about me saying anything about it because I was so cross at the time.
Yeah, I mean, just to weigh in on that, I didn't really like the fact that you walked out of the movie. I was all alone.
Oh, but, well, I asked you if it was okay.
I know, but I'm not going to say no.
No.
You were miserable anyway. I was stuck between a rock and a hard place.
I spied a chance to be efficient and I took it.
I'm pleased that you managed to see something you enjoyed.
Thank you very much, Phil. That's nice of you to say. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed it too. Don't forget to drop us a line at Super Bailey Bros on Twitter or superbaileybros@gmail.com with any thoughts or questions you had about the stuff we said, and get in touch with us if there's stuff you want us to cover as well. We've got quite a big list of segments that we're building up. We just can't
we
do
just
them.
Need to find a time to record
them. Yeah, we can't make them fast enough. There's so many. I think one of the ones I'll flag right now that I know we are going to do is a thing on Studio Ghibli movies.
Yeah, we're going to try and I think what we're wanting to do is almost like a roadmap for those people who haven't seen any of his movies before.
Yeah, just a bit of a discussion about that studio and some of the particular highlights, some of the movies that have blown us away, and maybe some of the movies you can afford to skip, that kind of thing. So look out for that amongst, you know, all kinds of other good stuff.
And yeah, please do email in. It's sorry we couldn't do any this week, but we love the emails, and we're looking forward to doing our email episode next week.
I should say, one of the emails we've got, which I'll cover in more detail next week, did say that your email specials are getting as long as your full show.
I thought the whole point was
still... I know. But, and actually, so it may not be an email special for that much longer, but just for now, we'll shove all the emails into next week's.
Okay, cool. So is that all the episode? We're done? Are we done?
That's it, man. I'm going to say goodbye. Are you ready to say goodbye?
I'm going to say goodbye.
Hey, bye, everybody. Thanks so much. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I am alive and for the county.
No.
And I drive the main road.
Guy, listeners, we wouldn't do that to you. I said we wouldn't do that
okay,
to you.
Okay, I don't know the lyrics anyway, but okay.
I'll say I had one. Here's my little extra bonus thing, Phil. Do you know when you go shopping and you check stuff out at a proper checkout, not one of the self-checkouts?
Mm.
So there's a cashier there or whoever. How good are you at making eye contact with them?
I'd say a 4.
A 4 out of what?
Just a 4.
Because I've noticed, like, with the card machines are quite low. And if you're getting all your stuff out of your bag and then you're starting to get your things ready, you know, especially if they help you with your bag and everything, you can't just stare at them while they put the stuff in the bag. And I realize, actually, there's no real opening for eye contact anymore other than the walk to the checkout. And you spend the whole time, both of you, just looking down. Two people stood less than a meter apart, just staring down. It's really, really weird. And I always try and get eye contact with these people before I leave. But then the problem with that is, because we've avoided each other's eye contact so naturally and so studiously, you know, even when you're doing the pin pad, you're putting your pin in, that then you do lock eyes with them.
It's really weird.
Too emotional. Yeah, it's too intense a moment. It's like, whoa, you need to get out of there fast. I just wondered whether anyone else has this same shocking moment.
I haven't really ever come. Have you ever ripped off the receipt for them?
Yeah, they don't like that.
I've done that. I didn't even realise I was doing it. It felt really weird.
Be careful.
Just put it back on the thing so they could give it to me, because I'd ruin the process.
Little man, yeah. Well, I'm interested to know, like, whether anyone else has had that experience. I think it's a really weird social phenomenon. And now I guarantee, Phil, that you're going to have it as well next time you do it.
Thanks very much, bro.
Well, there we go. There's my bonus. Bye.